This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
The terrific new film Challengers isn't just intense. It's about being intense. Intense about tennis, intense about sex, intense about competition, and intense about relationships with other people.
The film stars Zendaya as a coach, partner, antagonist, and object of desire to two men who are almost, but maybe not quite as competitive as she is. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about Challengers on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us today is senior supervising producer of audio at Slate, where she just relaunched the beloved podcast Death, Sex, and Money, Daisy Rosario. Hello, Daisy.
Hello, Linda. So happy to be here.
We're so happy to have you. Also with us and making their Pop Culture Happy Hour debut, whoop, 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 new panelist siren, is entertainment host, culture commentator, and GLAAD Media consultant Ryan Mitchell. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
If only everyone could have saw the dance I did. It was iconic. I'm super excited to be here.
Absolutely. The thing is, like, it's always just such a treat when I get to set the siren off. You know what I mean?
No, I appreciate it. I'm like, oh my God, it's Linda and Steven. Wow.
This is a good crew and we are excited. I think as the opening of Challengers has approached, a lot of its buzz, quite frankly, has been about the idea that it's like a horny threesome movie, which the trailer certainly suggests might be true. And maybe because its director, Luca Guadagnino, previously made Call Me By Your Name, which also got a lot of attention for its hornier elements, that's been a big part of the anticipation. So I just want to say, yes, in a way, it's a threesome movie, but maybe not primarily in that particular way. We will get into it. Zendaya plays Tashi, an up-and-coming tennis star who gets to know two best friends when they're all playing at the same tournament as teenagers. Mike Feist plays Art, the more shy and more rule-following of the two guys, while Josh O'Connor plays Patrick, who's a bit more daring and messy. Years later, we find Tashi married to Art and no longer playing tennis herself. Instead, she's Art's very hard-driving coach, and the two have fallen out of touch with Patrick. Details to follow. But when Tashi arranges for Art to play at a so-called Challengers event, which is in the lower tier of the professional tennis ladder, Patrick shows up to play too, and the two guys are thrown into a high-pressure match. This reopens all of the trio's old wounds, and they excavate all of their relationships with each other. So it's really a close study of these three people and basically nobody else. And I want to start with you, Daisy. What did you think of the movie?
Oh, man, I really enjoyed this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I just was never bored for a moment. This movie is kinetic. It is definitely horny, but it's not porny, which I actually think is perfect.
Good distinction. Good distinction.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I was trying to clarify in the opening. Yes. Is that, like, I think people are thinking of this as like the dirty Zendaya movie. And it's not that it isn't that,
yeah,
but it's like way more interesting than that sometimes makes it sound.
No, it's way more interesting than that. And like, it's horny, mm-hmm, but like, it's human. It's not just,
right,
it's not just acts. It's like kinetic in the body and the way these people interact and their chemistry and things like that. So I love that. Like the sweat, the human messiness of it all. Like the movie itself just also made me feel very like human. Mm-hmm. It was just so good to watch like bodies move and people be sweaty and have intense human emotions. So I thought it was a lot of fun. This was my first time seeing Josh O'Connor in pretty much anything. So
yeah,
I hope we get to talk about that more. But give me that soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was so much fun.
Yes, please. I worked out to it yesterday.
Oh, I need it now.
I found it and I was like, oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, this is another Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, mm-hmm, score, which, you know, they've obviously been very successful in recent years. Ryan, other than the wonderful score with its workout possibilities, what did you think of the movie?
Actually, obsessed is the language I would use because, mm-hmm, I didn't really have many expectations going into this film. I wasn't really sure. I knew it had a virality around it because of, obviously, mm-hmm, the threesome moment, quote unquote. But I really enjoy the messiness, I found myself kind of feeling some comfort, like very CW, like high 2006 MTV of reality TV that I thoroughly enjoyed. And for me, honestly, as a Capricorn rising, I saw myself in Tashi. And girl, I'm on the stand club of Tashi. So when we're ready to dive into her, let's go there.
Yeah, yeah. Stephen, I sat next to you at this movie and I kind of know that you enjoyed it as I did, but tell me what you enjoyed about it.
Well, Daisy hit on a perfect word to describe this movie, and that's kinetic. This movie is about 2 hours and 11 minutes, and I didn't feel a minute of it. I sat there completely plugged into this film's momentum, this film's already much discussed horniness. It is really paced by extremely gifted filmmakers. This is a sports movie that is not really about sports. It's certainly not about the big game so much as the relationships among these three people. It is also made by filmmakers who are fascinated by bodies. It loves looking at these people. This film loves a thigh as much as maybe any movie I have ever seen. And it is a sumptuous banquet in that regard, no matter what your preferences are. It winds up being a pretty deep character study. And I found myself fascinated by it while not necessarily coming down on any specific rooting interest. I found myself sort of rooting for the three of them to all run in opposite directions for their own good, which is, it's a messy love triangle. What could be better? But it also, it is a movie that I think really gets the excitement of tennis right, too. And as Ryan already alluded to, my gosh, that score.
Yeah.
It is a very score-forward film, and the score is very necessary to kind of put you in that kind of white-knuckle, moment-to-moment, what's-going-to-happen-next feeling. And it applies that score not only to tennis, but to other things.
Yeah. I loved this score, even though it is very, like, in a good way, it is very intrusive. Yeah. It is very, like...
It's supposed to be.
Yeah. It is a huge part of these scenes, partly because in any sports movie, you get a lot of stuff that's not about dialogue. You get a lot of stuff that is movement and body movement, and it makes sense that a lot of that is going to be heavily scored. The thing that I found most fascinating about this movie is that it got away with something that I usually don't like, which is it starts at an event, and then it's like, meanwhile, 15 years ago, and you just keep hopping back and forth, and it skips around. In this, I think it works perfectly, and the whole frame of the film really is this match between the two guys, which, of course, she is watching and she's present for, and the complexion of this match and how you feel about it and what you think is going on in this match keeps changing as they unravel the story of what has happened to these people up to this point. And so it winds up being a really good structure where I think it could have been a really lousy structure. And one reason I think they get away with it is that this film is interested in nothing and no one except these three people.
Yes.
There are no supporting characters. There are no B plots. There are no, meanwhile, what was her relationship with her parents? Let's meet her mom and dad.
Yeah.
For that reason, I think you can get away with the jumping around in the timeline.
Yeah.
I think because there aren't those distractions, the kind of muddled timeline worked for me a lot better.
I think in general, like the way that they chose to edit it, the story structure itself and the music and all of those things, they all have the same confidence. Like they were very like, this is the story we want to tell. This is how we want to tell it.
Yes.
And cool. Like you might have other expectations, but we know exactly what we want to do.
They also do a really nice job in this film of throwing in visual details with these characters that you then are left to fill in and wonder about. And not all of them are fully explained. The character of Art, who's Tashi's husband, has some kind of visible scarring that is never explained, kind of indicating that his body has been pretty beaten up by his life playing tennis. You're kind of left to wonder about these things as an audience member. So like you get those details, are instructive without underlining. And I think there's such clever character development in that.
And those kinds of things, leaving things like that unexplained mm-hmm. is also one of the main signs yes. of confidence, I think. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to Ryan about the fact that you mentioned earlier the character of Tashi and getting into mm-hmm. the character of Tashi. I was absolutely fascinated by her, too. Tell me about you and Tashi.
Yeah, there's something about Tashi that when I immediately saw her, I was like, wow. Imagine being a Black woman in this space. I mean, being a Serena, being a Venus.
Yeah.
One thing for me was obviously costume and the hair and how there was a structure of her, like the longer hair when she was younger, but it was like wild and free, but still tamed. Mm-hmm. I thought that was something super interesting that they did to really describe who this character was, because she was always in control. She may have pretended and maybe manipulated the system a little bit, but she always knew who she was. And I found that to be very powerful. And I love a character who lives in that gray area. There's nothing more exciting than wondering, is she the villain? Am I rooting for her? And honestly, I was, because she was longing for that high of excellence. And she said, oh, if I can't actually physically do it, I'm most definitely using one of you two as my pawn. And honestly, I stand because she deserves.
Well, and that's one of the things I love about the character development is that, like, you can understand what would appeal about each of these guys in different ways because they complement different aspects of this personality that we see. And so yeah. I loved all of that. Like, just, yeah, the way that they're built, the way that they interact. I love Tashi as well. I wouldn't want to know her in real life. but like, yeah, I really enjoyed the character for sure.
It added to the nuance of, I think, the racialness that a lot of people yeah. were probably wondering if this movie was going to hit. Mm-hmm. Because there is a line where her and Patrick are in the car and she's like, yeah, I'm taking care of my good little white boys. And it's like, thank you for talking about the elephant in the room. How are you dealing mm-hmm. with this dynamic of your career in this mostly white sport, this mostly male sport? How are you thriving and mm-hmm. striving and still making yourself feel mm-hmm. passionate and seen in this space, which is why you see, I thought it was so powerful that her character, she was the decision maker, in all honesty. And when Art was mm-hmm. kind of deciding, oh, I don't want to do this, he wanted her approval.
Yeah.
And I think that was something super powerful about this character. Yes, her permission.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that.
One of the other things I'm so far seeing, and I'm not surprised, is so many people don't, I think, you know, can lack imagination, if you will, in terms of what types of people and bodies exist. And so because so many people have mm-hmm. only like Serena Williams in their mind, not that there aren't other people available, but that they only have Serena in their mind, they're like, it's weird that Zendaya is playing an athlete this way because her body doesn't make sense. Like, she actually looks like plenty of tennis players' bodies in certain yeah. ways. It's like, it's that they're making yeah. only the connection to a player like Serena. And right. so I think there are these other aspects of being aware of race and how that would impact the character that while they don't speak to explicitly,
most
they
definitely.
Acknowledge for sure. Like, it's there in the character. And it was also, honestly, I think kind of nice to not just have to listen to them overdo some kind of conversation yeah. about it.
I think this is Zendaya's Oscar nomination, right?
Hands down.
What I kept thinking during the film is she has such a crystal clear impression of who this woman is. And
yes.
even though it's not easy to explain who she is necessarily, the sense of who she is and how she moves and talks and how the way she is as a teenager is different from yeah. the way she is as an older adult, but recognizably the same person. I think this is a stunning performance from her. It is one of my favorite. The way that she sort of came up in a certain way and has just gradually kind of knocked people out over and over and over again with how good she is, I think is such a great story, and it yeah. continues in this movie.
It's so smart that she was also a producer on this film, because
yeah.
she talks mm-hmm. about how all of her roles have kind of informed this character. I mean, there's a little Casey undercover. Mm-hmm. There's some Rue in there. And I think she's so smart about realizing the projects that really will inform that story she's trying to tell as her career. It's something super special to watch, to just see her kind of grow. And I think, honestly, when you think about if she taps back into Euphoria, I feel like she experienced a level of like art and excellence through this film that it may be difficult for her to tap back into certain things in the way she normally would have in the past. Once that door is open to like what you can achieve when it comes to the melting pot of cinema, girl, I'm not going back, you know? And so I think that's going to be really interesting in how that further informs the work that she does, because it's so clear about what she's trying to do as an actress. And honestly, as a producer, I was so excited to know that she was a producer on this. I'm like, yes, girl, this totally makes sense.
It is so much more common than it was when I was a younger person to see actresses in particular really take a strong hand in being producers.
Yeah.
It's really taking that like obviously active role in directing your own career.
I had an interesting experience. I watched this film, loved it, came home, and very shortly thereafter, my partner was watching The Crown.
Mm.
But I noticed, like, wait a second, Prince Charles is Josh O'Connor from Challengers.
Mm-hmm.
This is a diametrically opposite
Absolutely.
Performance. Both performances are contained in different ways, but I really found myself watching him and thinking, this guy's a hell of an actor.
Mm.
I think, Ryan, you mentioned Stanning.
Yes.
Like, I fully came away from the 1-2 punch of seeing Josh O'Connor in this and The Crown thinking, like, I will watch anything this guy does.
Right. And I do want to say a word for the actual tennis in this film.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
There is a long list in the credits of visual effects and compositing people who I assume had a lot to do with making these tennis matches look so good, even though I'm sure everybody also trained very hard and worked very hard, and I'm not suggesting that they didn't. But to create a believable tennis match played by people who are elite tennis players in your film, and to have the crowd involved and everything, like, that's hard to do.
I read an interview with Zendaya about it, and it sounds like, yes, the ball was definitely added in post.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm a huge tennis fan. Like, I love watching tennis. Mm-hmm. And I will say, as someone who does love sports, like, I do think that they keep a lot of the major
right.
moments
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
In terms of simpler understanding of the game. So if you don't completely understand tennis, like, don't worry. You don't need to be sitting there going, like, what is love?
Well, I will say, as someone who didn't know, I was like, what does this mean? Who's hitting what? Like, you know,
yes.
I'm not a sports person, but I think I love the idea of sports
yes.
documentaries and watching storytelling through that way. And I think they did a very good job at making sure the audience was just as involved in that game
yes.
as the players were. I mean, being able to be the POV of one of the players or, like, actually be the ball, I was like, did I actually go to a 4DX where my seat's about to start moving? I thought it really mm-hmm. added to the thriller aspect of this film. It kept you on your toes because, I mean, at some point I just was like, wow, I think I completely understand tennis and I'm going to go to every match now.
I'm glad you said thriller because it is an emotional thriller in a way that has some of the structure of that. And I'm not going to say anything about the ending except I feel like I need to watch the ending like 4 more times because I'm not 100% sure how I interpret it. But it's fine. I have to see it a bunch more times because I'm still thinking about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, there's been so much conversation around it. Do you all feel like it's a queer film?
I do.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, yes, in the sense that there is a strong erotic charge between these two guys, right? As well as a strong competitive charge, a strong friendship charge, possibly a romantic love charge. It's hard to say. It's a queer movie as much as it's a straight movie, mm-hmm. right? It is about queer desire as much as it's about not queer desire, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure any of these people have any idea how much of the relationships that they have with each other are about sex, friendship,
yeah.
romantic love, and tennis. Because all 4 of those things are in all of those relationships.
Yep. Blurring together. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of these people think about desire in a way that's really about other human beings. Do you know what I mean? What do you think?
I don't think it's a queer movie literally, but it is a queer movie emotionally. If you are uncomfortable with queerness, you are going to be uncomfortable with some of the sexual tension in this movie in general.
That's a fair point.
As a you know, proud bisexual, now married to a woman. It feels very queer, but it's just not. It's kind of queer the same way that Megan is queer, but it's not like overtly queer. You know?
No, I think that's such a good point.
Who directs a film is very, very important.
Yes.
When we've talked about a lot of different films over the years, you sometimes talk about like a directorial male gaze in a film, mm-hmm. and you're like, this is directed by a horny man, a horny straight man. And this film is clearly has a queer eye.
That's a great point.
Through which mm-hmm. you're watching it. Frankly, it's part of what makes this film feel really vibrant is the camera is just
it's pansexually shot.
It's pansexually shot.
It is.
Oh, exactly.
Oh my God, Linda, you ate that so much. Please put that on a t-shirt. Oh, yes, please.
Hard agree. Yes.
Drops, mic, cut, print. That's exactly what I was trying to say.
I think what's so interesting for me, like, it's most definitely deemed in my brain as a queer cult classic, but I think it really feels like more of a celebration of fluidity.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
When I think about, like, just white men or just cishet white men in general, I feel like they have this more of this opportunity to experiment in other ways that other POC folks have never been able to without it being hard, strictly labeled, this is what you are. And I always think of that as some sort of a kind of a privilege, right? This making out moment was such an interesting moment where I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, they had an experiment when they were younger and like now there's some energy and everything's kind of conflating. But I'm like, this is really interesting when you bring in what fluidity really looks like in identity.
Yes.
And I really appreciated that kind of like ease in the midst of this intensity of what this film is. Because I think we can overthink it so much where it's just like, honestly, if everyone is just horny, why are we not just doing it? Why are we not just connecting it with each other? Yeah. And I think this could be a really interesting new way of like getting away from the minority backlash of what queer storytelling could look like and still hitting it like head on.
Yep, absolutely. Well, as you can tell, we all really like Challengers. We hope you like it too. Tell us what you think about it. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Up next, what's making us happy this week?
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. This message comes from Capital One, presenting sponsor of the 2024 Tiny Desk Contest. Earlier this year, unsigned musicians from around the country submitted their original songs for the 10th annual Tiny Desk Contest. The panel of judges are hard at work picking standout entries, and you can follow along and choose your favorite videos as well. The winner gets to play their very own Tiny Desk concert, then headline a tour with NPR Music this summer. Want to come along for the ride? Visit tinydeskcontest.npr.org to learn more, then check out the Venture X card from presenting sponsor Capital One. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details. This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial, a member FDIC.
Now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Daisy, what is making you happy this week?
I love retro gaming. Mm-hmm, so I bought this device, the Anbernic RG35XXH.
I'm like, what in the Star Wars, RTD2, whatever?
Exactly. You know, there are a lot of devices that are sold online that you can play a lot of old games on, but this one doesn't require the amount of setup that a lot of those do. As someone who enjoys these games, but like has never, doesn't often find myself actually engaging with them as often as I would like, I think I finally cracked the code. And the code was to get the right size device that has the right amount of power.
Which platforms are these games from? These are early Nintendo games?
Yeah, we're talking about like NES, Super NES, Neo Geo, Atari, the real old school stuff.
Wait, did you say Atari?
I did start to say the word Atari.
Now, what is this device called? The IG-88?
The Anbernic RG35XXH. The H is because this is the horizontal one. So it's been a lot of fun. I really highly recommend.
Retro gaming. I love it. Thank you very much, Daisy Rosario. All right, Ryan, what is making you happy this week?
Thank you for asking this. And it actually has made me think maybe I should redefine what happy means, because Baby Reindeer on Netflix is everything that I've been thinking about. Like, it is absolutely insane. I do not want to spoil it. You all are probably going to talk about it. It's not only making me happy, but it's stressing me out. And I think everyone should watch it if you have the space and time, because it's worth it, in my opinion. I have a lot of...
Is it?
Here's the thing. I have a lot of thoughts about it, and I've been trying to, like, work through it, but I enjoyed it. And, you know, sometimes you need to sit through something that's going to keep your heart rate at 160, you know? Why not?
Excellent. I love it. Yeah, and Baby Reindeer, by the way, is a Netflix show. It is about a guy who meets a woman who starts, I guess, stalking him. And a lot of people interested in it. I have not seen it yet, but it is on Netflix. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
What is making me happy is a wonderful, wonderful thing in the world of pop music. The massive, meteoric, heart-swellingly wonderful rise of the fantastic pop singer Chappell Roan.
Yes!
Chappell Roan put out a record last fall called The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess. And if you haven't heard it, it is joyful and funny. Also, it has beautiful, heartfelt ballads on it. I had the intense privilege of booking and producing her Tiny Desk concert. And if you haven't seen her Tiny Desk concert, it is one of the best Tiny Desk concerts.
Heck yes.
The set kind of captures the range of her sound because it's funny in spots, it's quiet in spots, it's warm in spots, it's silly. Mm-hmm. From that Tiny Desk concert, let's hear a little bit of the song Red Wine Supernova. So that's Red Wine Supernova, which is just like one of the fantastic anthems that Chappell Roan plays in the Tiny Desk and that are on that record. She is amazing.
Chappell Roan, thank you very much. Stephen Thompson, I will give it a listen. All right. There is no Gen X complaint more overdone than they don't play videos on MTV anymore.
Oh, man.
And I know because I am a Gen X person who does not like the fact that they don't play videos on MTV anymore, which isn't fully entirely true. It's only kind of true. So I would not think that there was anything left to say about that. But that was before I started to listen to a podcast called Who Killed the Video Star? If you are a historian of this kind of thing, the very first video ever played on MTV was Video Killed the Radio Star. And this podcast basically tells the story of MTV. It's sort of through the lens of the shift away from the original model, but it also really gets into the history of the original model and its limitations and its, to say blind spots is like a huge understatement.
Yeah.
And it goes through like the entire history of how originally when they were not playing Black artists on MTV very much slash at all, their response was, that's not our format. The audience won't respond to it. So then Thriller comes out and they are completely wrong. And it's the biggest thing in the history of MTV. The whole thing is hosted by the great and good Dave Holmes, no relation to me, who was an MTV VJ.
And he's been a panelist on this show.
He's been a panelist on this show. He's also just one of the friendliest, coolest, just kind of understands pop culture of my exact vintage in a way that very few people do. It is such a good show. It's coming out week by week. Again, it's called Who Killed the Video Star? So that is what is making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some additional recommendations, you can sign up for our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. This was really super fun. Stephen Thompson, Daisy Rosario, Ryan Mitchell, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode is produced by Hafsa Fathima and edited by Mike Katziff and Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all next week.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.